Welcome back into the podcast. It's great to have you. I'm your host, Matt Norlander, and coming to you early from my Dallas hotel room, but able to squeeze in the podcast and thanking Jay Billis so much again for coming on. He is today's guest. Jay, how are you?
I'm doing great, Matt. How are you doing?
Doing well. Got one incredible game and two clunkers here in Dallas. The weekend in general was... I got to say, you know, if not for Trey Burke and Michigan coming back and giving us one heck of a game against Kansas and Kevin Ware's injury, if not for those two things, this might have been one of the more forgettable regional semifinal and final weekends. And, you know, I know Wichita State did some stuff, but we weren't provided with too much drama here.
Yeah, there wasn't. This wasn't one of the more dramatic tournaments. You know, obviously the competition and the play is always great. The players play hard. The coaches have great game plans, all that stuff. But we didn't have the close games that perhaps many people expected. And outside of Wichita State, who was, as you know, a top 15 team at one point in the season, I'm not sure we had, and Florida Gulf Coast, I'm not sure we had some of the volatility that everybody predicted. You know, the sort of wide open business, but it's been fun. It just hasn't been as memorable or dramatic as some other tournaments I can remember.
Agreed. And in fact, our Jerry Palm on the Ion College basketball blog, he said, we're actually, you know, if we are in jeopardy of having the most blowouts, if you want to determine a blowout as a double digit victory in tournament history, that if the three final four games are all decided by 10 points or more, it will set the record for most, games with that margin. We'll see. But we're going to talk about the entire weekend and then look ahead to the Final Four. Let's just go to Ware's injury first. You know, I was in the Michigan locker room getting quotes for my story, talking to Beeline when all this happened, and I, you know, I had no idea. I come out, I see a whole bunch of media standing there in the media area inside Cowboys Stadium, watching the TVs, and it was one of those things where I asked, you know, what's going on? What happened? And the looks on the faces of the media members were just like, dude, you do not even believe this injury. And then I went and I sat down and looked at Twitter, and it's you know, Theismann's name is coming up, and people are saying it's the worst sports injury I've ever seen. I know plenty of people that were actually on the site. Did you see it as it happened? Where were you? And can I get your thoughts on just the injury in general and the team's reaction and what you might find to be the closest thing to this that you've ever seen in college basketball?
I was in the, we call it the war room at ESPN watching the game, and it's on these gigantic TV screens. And the first that I understood that something was wrong and very wrong was when CBS showed Tyler Thornton, who was covering his eyes. And at first you thought, geez, you know, because he had just shot the ball. And he thought, did he get grazed in the eye or is there some sort of injury? Because there was clearly a stoppage in play. And when they cut to the next shot, it was Louisville players reacting, you don't want to say horror, but negatively reacting. It clearly they'd seen something that affected them like very few things they'd seen in their lifetimes in a game. And it was the most, I did see the injury in replay once. It was the most gruesome thing I've ever seen on a basketball floor. So I have nothing to compare it to. I've seen guys have, you know, hyperextended knee, elbows, things like that, where obviously you've seen all the ankle injuries that kind of make you shudder and turn away a little bit because you always think about yourself and the times that it's happened to you. But this is something totally different. And the only thing I could liken it to, Matt, was I thought about two things. I thought about Theismann. Those who are old enough to remember when Joe Theismann was tackled by Lawrence Taylor and broke his leg in a similar fashion. But there was no contact with Ware in this one. And the other thing I thought of, and maybe this is different, but it came into my head, was a pitcher named Dave Dravecki who essentially shattered his arm while throwing a pitch for the San Francisco Giants. He had arm surgery because of a cancer issue, and he wound up losing his arm over it. And I thought of that. It was that gruesome and difficult. But I'll tell you what, the way everyone responded to it, not just the Louisville players, but the Duke players, the medical professionals, and then especially Ware himself, to have had the presence of mind and the toughness to think about his teammates then and basically give them permission to move on and telling him to move on to the next thing. I thought that was extraordinary.
Yeah, I find the whole scene to be pretty incredible. I mean, yeah, I never saw the play. I tweeted that I will try and find a grave before I see that play. I just have no desire to see it. But to have seen the reactions of the team, I saw tweets that said there were a few Louisville players that actually threw up on the sideline upon seeing the injury. To have seen his teammates on the court, you know, Russ Smith was borderline inconsolable. To see Pitino, one thing I hadn't seen mentioned too much is that, you know, Pitino, between last year and this year, he has spoken so much about how this team in general has made him feel happy, young again. It's just a different group. He's had a different connection with this team, and to see him react so emotionally with it, I just thought it was incredibly powerful, and maybe that just speaks to the seriousness and unbelievability of the injury. But I think Spencer Hall of SB Nation tweeted out, the only other thing that really compared to this in terms of a reaction was when Deshaun Butler went down in the Final Four a couple of years ago, and you had this very intimate and tender moment between Huggins and Butler there on the court when he went out with that knee injury to end his college career.
You know, that's a good one. I didn't even think of that until you just mentioned it. That is probably the next thing you would go to in college basketball, or the one that's most memorable. And that didn't even occur to me. That's a good call there. Your point on the Louisville team, I think, is exactly right. It's a great group of players. I do a lot of the Louisville games. I do a lot of Big East stuff. And there are a bunch of great, great young men out there and all that. But I mean, I'd have a hard time finding a guy that I've enjoyed being around more than Peyton Siva. I can't sit here and say I've known him for a million years and I'll vouch for him. But in the interactions that I've had with him over the last 4 years, I can't think of a better young man. I mean, he's tremendous. And the way those guys interact, as hard as they work, and that's not to say that other teams don't work hard and don't have great players and great guys. But these guys are the folks I've been around. I put them up on the highest level of young men.
And if you, for anyone listening, if you go to the podcast post, I'll have a link to a great Instagram shot from Ware's hotel room or a hospital room, where actually Peyton Siva and Shane Bohannon have put on his jersey, and simple stuff like that. Very powerful images. As for Louisville as a team, as we look ahead to the Final Four, this group right now, to me, has an 2009-2005 Carolina feel, maybe a little bit of a Kentucky feel from last year, and just that they look so good. It extends beyond the NCAA tournament. Obviously, I was there in Manhattan. I saw their run for the Big East tournament. It goes beyond that, because the last time they lost was a 5-overtime thriller to Notre Dame on the road. There's no indication. It doesn't mean they can't lose, but there's no indication this team is going to lose. And we'll get to Wichita State in just a second here, but I've got this feeling they're going to beat Wichita State by 18 points, and then whoever they get in the title game, hopefully we'll get a good one. But they're clicking at such a revolution pace right now. I don't see how they get slowed down or stopped, Jay.
I agree. I think they're the best team. The only caveat I would have to that with the comparison to Carolina's 2009 team is that there was not one dribble of the 2009 season that I did not think Carolina wasn't the best team by far. I thought they were the best team, and there was nobody really that close. This year, there were times during the year where I didn't think that Louisville was the best team. You know, they went through a stretch in the middle of the year where they had a hard time scoring, lost three games in a row. They appeared a bit vulnerable, and they've had the best defense, period. They've had the fastest guards, period. Never thought for 1 second they didn't have that. But because of their inability to shoot the ball, they're not a very good shooting team. I thought, you know what, they can be had. Now I don't think that. I don't think there's anybody left in the tournament that will beat them. I agree with you that somebody can. Of course they can. But I think they would have to step out of the current area and the current level at which they are playing to do so. You know, if they played Syracuse would have to play at a much higher level than they have been playing. Wichita State, as well as they played, would have to play at a much higher level than they've played. And I think that would be true of Michigan, too. Although Michigan's been I think, the best offensive team in this tournament. But I agree with you. Louisville's the best team, and it's going to take an extraordinary effort to beat them.
Yeah. Now, they'll play Wichita State, and all credit to the Shockers. I got a couple quick thoughts on this. One, you know, Mason really broke down the door. But since 06, we've had Mason, we've had Butler to the title game twice, Jay. We've had VCU from the first four to the final four. And now we get Wichita State as a 9 seed, a team that, you know what, Creighton was the best team in the Valley. You know, in my opinion, that was not really, you know, refutable all that much. Wichita State was a good team, but Creighton proved, even though they beat, Wichita State, even though they beat Creighton once, this was the number two team. They didn't win the Valley Tournament. They've got a good group, but I mean, they lost a starting five from last year. I saw them lose in Portland in the first round last year. They had a really good team, and Marshall thought he had a really good group last year, and with this one, it's better defensively, but how shocked should we be by Wichita State when you look at the fact that now, clearly, all these teams since Mason in 06, there's just a paradigm has shifted here, and this is becoming something of a new normal. And I don't even know if the college basketball community of media and fans have really acknowledged that this is beyond trend now.
I don't know. I don't know that I agree with that part of it. Okay. Because if you look at the overall numbers, they're pretty similar to what they've been over the years. And you know, are you talking about the dreaded word parity now?
I'm not talking about parity. I'm talking about non-major conference teams, you know, almost every year since 06 breaking through to the Final Four, whereas that did not happen before that. You know, I don't really count Vegas because they were a different animal. But prior to that, we barely had it. We had Indiana State and Penn in 79. But beyond that, who else did we have until Mason came through? And since then, it's been Mason, Butler twice, VCU, and now Wichita State.
Yeah, I guess there were teams that were closer that didn't break through. So absolutely, that's fair. We have had more that have broken through of late. I don't know that that there are some sort of reasons behind it as the mid majors have risen in their quality of performance. I don't think that's true. I do think that we've had some years where the major conferences have not had as good of teams as they've had in the past. So I think that's fair. Because I think if you said, okay, let's look at this Wichita State team compared to Wichita State teams of the past, we can compare it to last year and the year before and all that stuff, but they're basically playing against the same competition. If you go back to the 80s, the Wichita State teams in the 80s were better than the Wichita State team now, way better. I mean, I don't think anybody would make a claim that somehow Xavier McDaniel, Cliff Levingston, and Antoine Carr weren't a better front line than Wichita State is putting out now. And, you know, my question has always been, you know, if there's parity now, if we agree that there's parity, when did it get here? Mm-hmm. Because the numbers suggest that if there's parity now, it's always been here. Now, if we're just saying that the Final Four is the only measure, okay, then we've had some more breakthrough, but they're still not breaking through at the rate that suggests there's, you know, sort of equality across the board. I don't think we have that, and I don't think you're suggesting that. But the fact that we've got, if you get a good draw, you can navigate your draw. I think teams are getting a little more savvy about how they navigate the tournament, that everybody's smarter about how they deal with it. They see, you know, Wichita State had a good path, but so did a lot of other teams, and they navigated their path really well. I think the one sort of, they did not get a good draw in the first round. I thought they got a team that was worthy of better than an 8 seed. But after that, I think they had to pretty much like their draw. I didn't think they got the best 1 seed, and they certainly didn't get the best 2 seed. But, you know, I thought Ohio State was going to get through. But they did, you know, this is a really good team. And I think the one thing about what you had said before that I would say, I think there may be a reason for that about Creighton being the best team during the season, is that Wichita State didn't have Ron Baker during the year because he was out. He was out for an extended period of time. I don't know how many weeks. But that kid has made a huge difference for them because of his ability to stretch the floor, He knocks shots down pretty decent defensively, and he, you know, he goes to the free throw line. He makes every free throw. He's really helped them a lot, and I think he helps make them a much better team.
Agreed, and Carl Hall was actually out for a little bit of time for Wichita State as well, so you got a good point there. Baker's a good kid. I was with the team in Salt Lake, so I saw their upset of Gonzaga in that hideous game against Pitt. For people listening that are, you know, they're seeing Wichita State into the Final Four and have been surprised by them, but really haven't seen them all too much. Can you explain what kind of style Marshall has decided to run, what the identity of this team is that has a new starting five compared to what they were last year?
Well, Greg Marshall is a disciple of John Kress from the College of Charleston. He spent 7-8 years with Kress, and so he has a lot of the belief sets that Kress did as far as changing defenses, giving you different looks. He'll play some zone to see what your zone offense is like, and if he can exploit that. He's really smart about identifying weaker defenders and going after them. They do a good job with this year's team of playing through the post. You mentioned Carl Hall, who is a junior college player that he brought in last year, I think was his first year, and he brought him in last year. He had a heart condition when he was in junior college. But he's a guy that's a kind of a low post player more than anything, and a really good rebounder, 6'8", strong, agile. And then he's got a kind of a hybrid 4-3 and a guy named Clee Anthony Early, who's 6'8", also, who can face up and hit threes, but also go down in the post. And they do a good job of isolating the post. Their guards are very good. Malcolm Armstead, I think, is terrific. He's a left-handed point guard that transferred from Oregon. And when he left Oregon, he's had to pay his own way, and at Wichita State. And he's been working at a car dealership and trying to pay his own way and make some extra money. And so he's a focused, tough minded kid, and he doesn't back off of anybody. And I think the hearing so much, people always say they play with a chip on their shoulder and all that. They just want to win, and they don't want to be taken for granted, which I think is pretty cool. And they want to compete. And they compete every day in practice because Marshall demands it. Marshall was at Winthrop, and I think he had won like 7 conference championships at Winthrop, and he had some really good teams. You know, he was the coach when they beat Notre Dame in the Yes. NCAA tournament, and so he's had success. And the thing I like about Greg is, like, if you say, hey, wait a minute, you know, like at this level or at that, if you talk about levels, he don't want to hear that. He's saying we're just as good as anybody. And I like that. They should believe that, and they do sort of this play angry stuff, and they go after people. They don't take a back seat to anybody, nor should they. Lace them up and play. That's why in the selection process and all this stuff, say, hey, treat everybody the same. Let's lace them up and play, and he does that. And I think that filters down to the players, and they have high expectations of themselves of beating anybody they play against.
Yeah, they're a fun team. I hope they can keep it close against Louisville. I don't have high expectations of that, but the best kind of stories in regard to the Wichita States is when we don't expect them to do something, they do it anyway. They've done that to an extent already, so hopefully they can give us a good one there in Atlanta on Saturday night. We'll go over to the East region here. Syracuse to the Final Four. I find one parallel between Wichita State and Syracuse is that, in my opinion, they actually had better rosters last year. And now Syracuse, they made an Elite Eight last year, and now they go to a Final Four and they take the hard road there. They were kind of a chic pick to lose to Montana, which seems so silly in retrospect, but whatever. They uglied out a win against Cal, a decent Cal team, and then the win over Indiana. I was actually fortunate enough to get lucky at the dartboard. I did think the zone would frustrate Indiana. I did not think it would frustrate them to that point. I know we're a few days removed from it, but I did want your quick analysis or reaction as to why this happened. Indiana was the best per possession point per possession team in the nation this year, Jay. They didn't crack 40 points until they were at the foul line with 6:05 to go. That to me was fairly surprising. I thought they'd struggle. I just didn't think they'd struggle this much. Was it simply a case of IU being vexed by the zone? Was it a little more of, okay, just the shots weren't falling? How did you kind of tally up and see why Indiana looks so mediocre against SU when they hadn't for most of the year on the offensive end?
I think it was a combination of things. I think they had they had made. I think they overthought things. The players did. I think they were very well prepared. I'm not a big believer that you're overprepared or people saying, hey, they talk too much about the zone and psych themselves out. But when they did get in the game, they looked like they were thinking instead of reacting and trying to figure out some kind of puzzle instead of just playing. And, there are certain areas in the zone. There are only really four or five things you can do against the zone that are really effective. You know, you can screen it, you can penetrate gaps, make two play one, overload it. And people talk about it all the time, beat it down the floor. But in order to beat it down the floor, the other team has to essentially take a bad shot or make a mistake and turn the ball over. And Syracuse really didn't do much of that. And most of the time, the team that was running was Syracuse. And that's when they're really good. But it was interesting. Syracuse, the games yesterday, the games the day that Syracuse played, Syracuse and Wichita State made it to the Final Four, and neither team shot 40%.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether that's happened before, but it's been a while. It's been, maybe when they took the ball out of the peach basket with a ladder in it, they did. But, that's pretty lame, honestly. I don't think that was a good, this is a great offensive team that Syracuse has. They score 55 points and win. That's brutal. But they're since the Big East tournament, they were a different team after they played Seton Hall because they saw a shot go in. And James Sutherland made some shots, and Michael Carter-Williams stopped trying to prove he could shoot and tried to prove he was a really good point guard and started driving it. He started passing first, and then he shot a jump shot because it was wide open and available instead of trying to be the scorer. And I think that they've moved the ball a lot better. And a lot of times, when you're not a great shooting team, if you take better shots, you'll be a much better shooting team. And I think that's what's happened with them. But the fact that they've seen the ball go in has really been helpful, and it's been really helpful to their defense. It's energized them to the nth degree. And I think that's a huge factor in this. It's not that they're making every shot, they're making some. And if Sutherland makes a shot, if Michael Carter-Williams makes a shot, the defense has to play him. That's just the way the game works. And they've been much, much better as a result of that. And that's given them a chance. They're confident again. They're attacking again. And Brandon Trish is attacking again instead of, worrying about the shot going in. And sulking's the wrong word, but letting things affect him to where he's bothered by. Now he misses a shot, he runs down and plays defense and tries to get a stop and take it the other way. They look better collectively, and it's actually neat to see. I didn't anticipate them going to the Final Four, but I anticipated them playing a lot better than they did toward the end of the season when I didn't think they were very good at the end of the season. And I was there in the Verizon Center when they were held to 39 points by Georgetown. And I think I said during the game, they looked like a fragile team, that everything affected them, everything negative. You could see it in their body language and the way they reacted. And then almost like, I don't know whether you call it poetic or what, but then they hold Marquette to 39 points in that building, but they only scored 39 and looked as bad as they could look, and then looked about as good as they could look, at least defensively against them. It was a remarkable turnaround.
Yeah, they're a bizarre Final Four team, and considering all the things the program has kind of endured and gone through and gone up against off-court stuff the past 2 years, for Bam to get to a Final Four, I just find that from a storytelling and from a writer's perspective pretty interesting. We'll hit the South last here. It's where I was. The Kansas-Michigan game, the game of the weekend of the Sweet 16 / Elite Eight, if you will. To me, it actually, being there and being courtside, it felt like Michigan was climbing its way back. I wasn't certain if they were going to win, but I was pretty certain that the game was going to be decided by at least 5 points. I actually had a bad vantage point on Burke's game tying three because I could not. I just thought he was maybe a foot behind the 3-point line. I didn't have a good depth perception there. And then they play the replay, and I'm like, wait, what? Like he was how far out? For you watching, did it feel like one of the more memorable all-time comebacks, considering Kansas a 1 seed, considering how, see, what we're going to forget here is that Kansas really looked for about 36 minutes like the better team. And, as writers, we sit there on press row and we start to build out our stories because you don't want to write everything at the buzzer. And at about that, with about four, maybe three and a half to go, I stopped and I was like, you know what? I can't necessarily write this out. Did it feel like to you this was one of the more epic tournament comebacks you can remember, or maybe am I overstating that just a little bit?
No, it was. I think it was up there of more improbable comebacks that I've seen, because I thought that Michigan was dead in the water. I mean, they were way down, and then they were down with a minute to go.
Mm-hmm.
They're 6 points down, but when Kansas got that 10-second call in the backcourt, that's when I thought, you know what, they could blow this. And that's the way I was looking at it at the time was, anytime you make a comeback like that with those kind of numbers in that setting, you have to do some great things. Burke's shot, the way they played down the stretch, they did some great things. You don't win without doing great things. So, you give Michigan a ton of credit. But even doing all those great things in Kansas's position, you don't lose without screwing up. And they screwed up. And that was a game where if you look at that objectively, any coach or basketball person, whatever, looks at that objectively and says, okay, in that situation, who should have won? Kansas would win every, you would say Kansas should win every time. Every time. All they had to do was take care of the ball and not cough it up with ridiculous mistakes. Knock a free throw down. They had a chance to, they had plenty of time to get to the rim in regulation. They didn't do it. And they had plenty of time on the last play to Elijah Johnson to go into the defense. So come to a jump stop and go right into the defense. They were down two, and go to the basket and make somebody foul you if you get an opportunity to get a foul. And he didn't do that. He just gave the ball up. There are some people that thought, like, I think Elijah Johnson's a good guy. I really like him. I think he's a really good player. There were some people who were saying, Coach K talks about this all the time, the basketball gods or something. I'm not a believer in that, but there were a lot of people who thought it was poetic justice that after what had happened in the first half with McGarry, with Elijah Johnson,
right,
sort of that punch that he threw, that the fact that they wound up losing was somehow poetic justice. I don't believe in that kind of thing, but he clearly made a mistake there that I think he'd like to have back.
Yeah, and in regard to Johnson's bizarre play at the end of the game, I actually think he wasn't, like, I think he was just kicking and he kind of might have lost his train of thought there, and then he realized, oh, I'm too far down here to pull off a good shot, and so then he knew he had a second or so to kick it out, and it just turned into this bizarre broken play. I don't think he actually had the angle for the layup there personally, but yeah, Kansas goes down, and Bill Self is building up an amazing career, but an interesting one, because he's so dominant in the regular season. He's got that national championship in a dramatic way, but I know some Kansas fans are frustrated, and they don't want to run Bill Self out. Don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying here, but they do have these tournament losses there that have these tremendous stings to them when you just think about the Bucknells and the Bradleys and here against Michigan. But they go down, Michigan moves on, and they beat Florida. I want a quick thing from you on Florida, Jay. This is a team that's lost three straight Elite Eights, but Billy Donovan's an amazing coach. I don't think there's a common thread between each of the games. You know what? I think it's almost one of those good problems. Yeah, you didn't make a Final Four, but no other team in this tournament had made three straight Elite Eights, and it's rare we get a program that can do that. So I think Florida fans might be a little contradicted in how they feel, because they've got this really good coach, this really good program, but they just have not had a great team amid this run that's flirted with getting to that final weekend.
Yeah, I mean, they probably should have gotten to one out of the three, at least. I thought they kind of gave away that Butler game, and they did not perform particularly well last year against Louisville down the stretch. That's not to take any credit away from Butler or Louisville. This year, I didn't think they competed. I didn't think they competed from the opening tap. They were getting beat to loose balls. They were getting beat down the floor, especially in transition early on. And listen, Mitch McGarry can really run. That kid is a big guy, changes ends as well as any big guy in the country. He's nimble on his feet. He can really run. He isn't that fast that you can't get down the floor and contest. And they didn't get down the floor and contest. And so early on, you thought, you know what, this isn't going to happen. Like, if that's the way they came out of the gate, there's no switch you can turn that's going to say, okay, well, now they're going to start playing. That usually doesn't happen, especially in a game of that magnitude. So I think that would be the thing that if I were Billy Donovan, I'd be the most disappointed in, is if they didn't compete. But that's they had a heck of a year. And, you know, they were playing differently this year than they had in some years past, where they didn't, you know, they weren't a pressing team. They didn't deny out on the wings like they used to. They were more of a containment defensive team and a gap presence on defense. And they were the only team in the tournament that was in the top five in both offensive and defensive efficiency. The only team in the country all year long,
right,
that was in the top five. And so they had a terrific year. They just didn't have that I don't know what you call it, star power, that extra punch that you need to be a, like, you know, if you look at the Final Four teams, with the exception of Wichita State, all these teams have they have a star and somebody that can carry them at times. But Florida didn't have that. That's the one thing they lacked, in my judgment.
Real quick on Trey Burke, you know, as we went into Selection Sunday, would he have been your college basketball MVP, or did you have Porter and clearly now with Burke reaching the Final Four and playing the way he has? I mean, I kind of wrote a little bit. It's kind of indisputable that, to me at least, he is college basketball. I mean, what he's done, he's got plenty of talent around him. I think that actually enhances the case for him and showcases his ability, because he can carry a team like he did against Kansas. But Mitch McGarry is a good player, don't get me wrong, but Mitch McGarry is amazing because of what Trey Burke opens up for him.
I think that's true. You know, McGarry's tremendous, and he's getting better and better. And I think, if he comes out, he'll be a first-round draft pick. But I think Burke is the best player. I thought he was the best player all year long. And I don't know, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but I mean, I voted before the tournament started in all the awards, and I voted for him. So he was my player of the year before the tournament ever started. And I don't know whether all the votes have been tallied or any of that stuff. I have no idea what the results are. But to me, it wasn't a hard decision. I thought he was the best player from the word go, and has been the most consistent. And throughout the Big Ten, which is the best conference in the country, he was the best player and performed at the highest level. People say, well, his team finished fourth or fifth or whatever they finished. I'm like, forget it. That guy was the best player. And you know, reasonable minds can differ, but that was my judgment. And I don't look at sort of how he's performed in the tournament and say, okay, well, that validates it or that proves it, because I think you make that determination, kind of like selection and seeding, you make those determinations.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the regular season. And that's why, most outstanding player, I don't care how you played during the season, it's how do you play in the tournament. That's how you give out most outstanding player award. And the player of the year goes for the year. Otherwise, we'd have just one and give it out in Atlanta after the final game.
I get you. Okay, as for the final games here, presuming you've got Louisville still to win it all, which I do now too as well, but who do you think they're going to play next Monday?
I tend to think they'll play Syracuse. Even though Syracuse has a hard time scoring, Syracuse is going to have to score more than 60 points to beat Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're going to hold Michigan down like that. I think it's going to be a really difficult game for Syracuse, but I do think that they're playing at such a high level on the defensive end that I think they've got a very good opportunity to beat Michigan. And with the size that those guys have out front and the way that Michael Carter-Williams is playing, I favor Syracuse a little bit. But that game's more of a coin flip. I don't think anybody, unless they play at a higher level than they've been playing, or unless Louisville takes a major step back, I don't see anybody beating Louisville. It's kind of like you mentioned Kentucky last year. They're not as good as Kentucky last year because Kentucky was a better scoring team, I think. But they're close. I think Pitino would like to play Kentucky last year with this year's team. I think he'd like that challenge because they're shooting it better. Russ Smith is way better this year. Luke Hancock is making shots now, which he did not do earlier in the year. He was not making shots like this. Having wear out hurts, though, because he was doing he's long-armed, he's athletic, he can score in transition, he rebounds, gets deflections and steals. You know, he would have been a really good player to have in there, but with Corgi Jang a lot better this year than last year, I think Rick would like to have a shot at Cal's team last year. And one of the things, last thing, Matt, one of the things I'm looking forward to is I can't imagine that Pitino's not going to get in the Naismith Hall of Fame this weekend.
Right.
If he doesn't, I'll be very disappointed. But I think that'll be a nice thing, watching him go to his seventh Final Four and to get that honor, because he's been truly one of the great coaches in the history of the game. And if not for having left Kentucky when he did to go with the Celtics, which I think most reasonable people would have done given the money. I think I think he would probably have 4 or 5 national championships by now. He had it going like that, and it would have kept going, I think.
That's a good point, and you're probably right. Hey, you're one of the best, Jay. Thank you so much for coming on. Are you going to be in Atlanta, or are you doing mostly studio stuff up there in Connecticut for ESPN for the Final Four?
No, I'm going to be in Atlanta. I'm actually doing one of the semifinal games for international feed. So learning all those languages by by Saturday is going to be tough.
That is terrific, dude. Well, hey, listen, I look forward to crossing paths. Thanks so much for coming on, being so good to the show here. And I'll see you in a couple of days, all right, man?
Always my pleasure. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Yeah, there we go. All right, that's Jay Billis for you. Follow him at Jay Billis on Twitter. I'm going to try and squeeze in 4 podcasts this week again, so look out on Tuesday night. We should have another one. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Subscribe on iTunes, and we'll talk to you really soon.